You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
The law feature on Classic Business is brought to you by leading full-service law firm Webber Wenzel. Through an alliance with Linklaters and relationships with law firms across Africa, Webber Wenzel ensures that you have the best expertise wherever you do business. Now, on the 4th of February this year, the Constitutional Court handed down its decision in the case of Amabungani Center for Investigative Journalism versus the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services, and the judgment has already received worldwide acclaim. It found in favor of Amabungani, the investigative journalism organization, in a landmark case involving the collision between the right to privacy and the right of the state to engage in surveillance, some might say spying. I'm joined now by Dario Milo. He is a partner at Webber Wenzel, also adjunct professor at Wits University, a member of the Neuberger high-level panel of legal experts on media freedom. But he's also really famous for knowing Amal Clooney. Dario, welcome.
Hello, Michael. Nice to be on. Thank you for calling.
Now, it's not every day you get Edward Snowden tweeting about a South African judgment, and you and your team acted for the Amabungani Centre and Sam Sol. You're assisted by three exceptional counsel, Stephen Budlender, Stuart Scott and Timoleng Polani. Just take us back to where and how this all began.
Yes, Michael, it's of course an interesting story, and the inspiration for the case came from the fact that Sam Sol, the journalist and co-founder of Amabungani, he fortuitously found out, you know, that he had been under surveillance. And although at the time, which was 2007 when he was under surveillance, and 2008, he strongly suspected it, it was only when the spy tapes litigation started 7 years later that, you know, court papers with transcripts attached were part of former President Zuma's papers. And those transcripts revealed that conversations between Sam Sol and Billy Downer, who was and is the prosecutor of Zuma, had in fact been intercepted and recorded and monitored. So armed with that information, you know, that he had been placed under surveillance, and armed with the proof that in fact that was the case, Sam and Amabungani decided to proactively challenge the legislation that permits this kind of surveillance, which is called RICA. And in doing that, what we did with them and with counsel is we looked carefully at RICA and selected five specific areas where we thought RICA fell short of the kinds of safeguards you would expect when you bear in mind that what is actually permitted under RICA through surveillance or spying, as you say, is an egregious invasion of privacy. So although we accepted that, you know, surveillance laws are very common around the world, and there is a place for surveillance laws to fight crime and to guard against external and internal threats to national security, there certainly is a place for it. What we said is that that's fine, but you've got to make sure that you don't allow for the abuse of RICA through not having the right checks and balances or safeguards in RICA to guard and safeguard a person's and citizens' privacy.
And it also becomes a question of who guards the guards in this case and why this is such an important judgment. And we see Justice Mbuyiseli Madlanga writing for the majority of the court, placing the right to privacy at the heart of this case. What did he have to say?
Yes, Michael, that's exactly right. What Judge Madlanga said is he said that privacy lies at the heart of the case, because when we, you know, communicate with whoever we're communicating with, whether it's our children, family, associates, colleagues, we do so expecting that what we're saying to them is private. And so that is where we reveal our innermost secrets and confidences, etc. And we would all be horrified to know that someone was listening in on that. And of course, that's what RICA permits. So what he said is that you have to ensure that the power given by RICA to state officials is balanced by ensuring that there are sufficient safeguards in place to protect the privacy of citizens.
And it does all boil down to proportionality, doesn't it? As does the issue in so many classic constitutional battles, the question becomes one of how the state goes about balancing this requirement to respect our individual rights to privacy versus its need to ensure that it's as the state doing enough that that it can be justifiably held to do to ensure our state sovereignty and security. How was this addressed?
Well, that's where you get into the detail of it, and that's where our five challenges came in. And just to take you through a few of them, I mean, what we said in relation to one, which is very important, is we said that after surveillance is over, you know, the person, the target of the surveillance should be notified. And that's actually quite standard in many countries around the world, that once surveillance has served its useful purpose, you notify the party that has been under surveillance because you've obtained the evidence by the surveillance. It's come to an end. You now know whether the person is involved in the crime or whatever, and you notify them that they have been under surveillance. And of course, the reason that would help, if you think about Sam Saul's case, is that he would have found out 7 years ago, or longer, of course, because of the court process, that he had been under surveillance. And being a journalist who was investigating the arms deal at the time, of course, there was absolutely no basis for that surveillance. So had he found out sooner rather than much later, he could have challenged that by bringing an application to declare the surveillance unlawful. He could have demanded records to show why he had been put under surveillance. He could have agitated for reform. And, of course, he could also have claimed damages because it was an invasion of his privacy. So the idea is that notifying parties after they've been placed under surveillance at least means that the state would not be acting with such impunity, as the judge put it, when they apply for these orders. They'll know that ultimately this is going to come out, and they can't rely on the fact, as they do at the moment, until the judgment at least, that it's perpetual secrecy. So that's just one example of how you kind of at a very detailed basis have to look at how you balance national security with and investigating crimes with privacy.
What are some other checks and balances here that can help ensure that government just doesn't continue operating with unfettered power here? There was some issue around the office of the designated judge, wasn't there, and the independence of that office?
Yes, exactly, Michael. One of our challenges was that the office of the designated judge, now that's a judge, in fact a retired judge, who's appointed by the Minister of Justice under RICA to grant these orders. So that judge will hear applications for spying orders, surveillance orders, and grants them or refuses them. Now that office of the designated judge, being a retired judge, is someone who's appointed by the Minister of Justice, and the terms are renewable. So it can, in fact, lead to a situation where there are repeated appointments of the same judge. And we said that that was a problem from an independence perspective. The court agreed with that and said that Parliament's got to fix that. Another very important check and balance for lawyers and for journalists is that if the subject of the surveillance is a lawyer or a journalist, the judge, the designated judge, has to be informed of that fact before he or she grants the order. And also has to make sure that the order, if it is granted, contains sufficient safeguards to protect sources for journalists and to protect the communications between clients and lawyers for lawyers. So that's a very important innovation as well, which the court held must immediately apply, of course, with Parliament looking at the issue as well. And I'll mention one other, and that is that the court said, you know, that once the state gets this information, because they've got the order, there needs to be very precise regulation about how they can manage it, who's entitled to access it from the state, when they are obliged to destroy it, how they must destroy it, etc. Because for all we know, Sam Saul's information is still sitting somewhere and has not been destroyed. And the idea would be that if it was regulated, then the state would have a duty to ensure that it was permanently destroyed and not sort of surfacing conversations that Sam may have had with his wife or his children or others that might surface many years down the line.
And there is reasonable cause for that suspicion, considering what we've heard at the Zondo Commission around the infiltration by nefarious elements of the state's security apparatus. It's not as if this is without due cause for concern. What does this mean for ordinary South Africans from here? Because I believe now Parliament's got to go back to the drawing board, so to speak, and get its act together. What are the next steps?
Well, Michael, two important things immediately. The one is that any citizen who is being spied on by the state under RICA will be entitled to be notified of that within 90 days, so that's within 3 months about, of the surveillance coming to an end. That's the general rule. There are circumstances in which the state can get an extension on that, but they've got the burden. The default rule is you are entitled to know. So What that means is a citizen who might have been placed under surveillance unlawfully, you'll get to know about that and you can take legal action. It's the first big implication. The second is bulk surveillance, which actually we haven't spoken about yet because it's not really a RICA problem. Bulk surveillance, which is not regulated at all by the law, is in fact unlawful since the Constitutional Court's judgment. And that is what that is it refers to the surveillance of internet traffic largely through the tapping of foreign signals. But of course, foreign signals, if I communicate on Google, Gmail, to someone else, that goes through foreign signals, and it means that the state was basically, in this very indiscriminate and non-systematic way, you know, and often through keyword searches, they were able to basically spy on the internet traffic of all South Africans. And so that's the kind of mass surveillance which Edward Snowden exposed insofar as America is concerned some years ago. Now, what the judgment says is that the state can't do that at the moment because they've got no law that allows them to do it. Now, it doesn't mean the state can never do bulk surveillance, but they've got to come back through a parliamentary process with a law that is reasonable and justified and that protects privacy. So that's the other very big practical consequence, I think, for everyone, every citizen in South Africa.
And hence Edward Snowden's tweet simply saying, wow, I mean, it really is quite something. Daria, I love the title that you used for this on your blog, The Spy Who Notified Me. They should have gone with that one in the Daily Maverick. Thanks so much for your time. Unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. There's another very important judgment, the slap judgment, David and Goliath stuff, but maybe we can have you back on the show next week to run the rule over that.
That would be wonderful. Thank you, Michael.
That was Daria Milo, partner at Weber Wenzel, talking about the recent RICA judgment, a huge victory for the right to privacy here in South Africa, with the law feature on Classic Business brought to you by Weber Wenzel. Over 150 years of experience and deep industry knowledge, Weber Wenzel is the leading full-service law firm on the African continent.
Knowing that limitations exist and knowing that there are no boundaries to your possibilities, combining knowledge and experience to provide tailored and commercial business solutions, leveraging key relationships with global firm linklaters and law firms across Africa. That is the value of experience. With over 150 years of experience and deep industry knowledge, Weber Wenzel is the leading full-service law firm on the African continent. See the value of experience at weberwenzel.com.